This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Therapist Elizabeth Haney left her private practice to participate in a Defense Department initiative that offers free, confidential counseling to combat veterans and their families. After more than 30 years of counseling experience, she says she can safely say that her military clients were unlike any patient she'd met before. She learned to let go of preconceived notions of the military to adopt new ways to forge relationships with her clients. Gradually, the stories of war, loss, and readjustment to civilian life came tumbling out. She shares those stories in her new book, The Honor Was Mine, A Look Inside the Struggles of Military Veterans. And she joins me now from our sister station in Asheville, WCQS. Elizabeth Haney, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Tell us first about this opportunity to work with the Defense Department, kind of how you heard about it and why you accepted.
You know, I heard about it from colleagues. I was in private practice in Tucson, Arizona, wanted to make some changes in my life, and I had some good friends who were doing this work. And it just met some logistical needs that I had in terms of pay and places to live. And, you know, frankly, I didn't take it out of any dedication to working with service members, I'm a little embarrassed to say. So when the work opened up into as deeply as it did for me, I was really quite surprised.
And you talk about military culture, your adjustment, your introduction to military life. I think maybe the story of Major Buchanan gives us a sense of what it was like for you to come out of private practice into the military.
That happened on the very first day I arrived at my very first military base, and I, with a group of colleagues, I was to meet at a certain building at 9 o'clock. So we all showed up at 9 o'clock. Major Buchanan walked into the room, and the air sort of bristled as soon as she walked in, and she turned around and started scolding us for being late. And I was flabbergasted. I kept looking at the clock. It was 9 o'clock. I'm supposed to be here at 9. And she basically said, from now on my base, you show up 15 minutes early or you're late. And I thought, whoa.
So that's welcome to the military. And but then I think Major Buchanan told you what she thought of civilians, too, in no uncertain terms.
Yeah, she basically said, we don't really need you here, and I'm going to be watching you. And if you can't get to places on time, we'll make some changes. Yeah. Is that clear? And the room just chorused, yes, ma'am.
And eventually said I hate civilians. Was that her?
Major Buchanan? That was someone quite later in the book, okay. But I did run into that, frankly, with several military people who are just, you know, decided to open up and say, I can't stand civilians.
There you go. So welcome to the military. Now you're there, and your job will be to sort of work through all of that, and also your own prejudices about the military. You had to work through some of that yourself, right?
You know, I expected them to be sort of cookie cutters of each other. I thought that all their individuality would have gotten sort of hammered out of them in boot camp. I expected them to be sort of gung-ho about going to war. None of those were correct. None of those.
So what did you do? So that's a little bit of a learning curve for you. How were you received? Obviously, the brass is telling you kind of how they feel about you, but your job is to work with veterans and to obviously have them trust you and tell stories. How did that go at first?
Well, I had to learn how to sort of slow down. You know, in private practice, people show up, they're ready to talk because they've paid for that time. But this job was completely different. I'm working with such a different population. They're pretty buttoned up, you know. They're very, very schooled in being tough. And so I had to do an awful lot of chatting and just finding a way to connect with each individual soldier. So with one soldier, it might be talking about back home in Montana. The next soldier, it might be talking about their kids. And, you know, there's a story in the book called Check My Ride. I was talking with Sergeant Dominguez, former Sergeant Dominguez. He was a Vietnam veteran. And, you know, we would chat from time to time as I made my rounds through the buildings. And then one day he said, hey, have you seen my bike? And I said, no, I haven't. And he said, well, come outside, check my ride. And I'd like to read you a little bit from the book.
That'd be great, yeah.
Okay, great. So this is from Check My Ride. We talk about the bike for a good 20 minutes as he points out different details he designed or added. He mentions bike weekends he goes to in nearby beach towns where he can ride with others. And he tells me about solo rides he takes out into the countryside, where he rides for hours just to clear his head. Dominguez confesses his wife isn't crazy about riding it with him, but he hasn't given up hope of getting her more interested. His hands dart and flutter as he talks. His body moves in a sweet dance around the bike while he describes the fun he has on it, his eyes more animated than I've ever seen them. We laugh as he describes the multiple plans for tricking his wife into going on Sunday rides with him. After a while, the words stop, and we stand quietly admiring the bike. His voice is surprisingly somber when he speaks again. When I got back from Nam, I couldn't get my head clear. I wasn't in good shape, kind of depressed, real nervous, angry a lot. I didn't know what to do, and I'm not really the counseling type. But this dude I knew from my platoon said he'd gotten a bike, and something just clicked. I thought I'd give it a try. So I went down to the dealership and took one for a test drive. I gotta tell you, from the very first moment I got on it and headed down the road, I felt free. Man, I felt peace. The bike still does that for me. It clears my head. I don't know what I would have done without it, to be honest with you. I reach over and shake his hand. Nice ride.
That's Elizabeth Haney reading from her new book, The Honor Was Mine, A Look Inside the Struggles of Military Veterans. She'll be reading at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. She's with me now on The State of Things. It took you a while. I'm wondering if that is much different. It seems to me that in counseling, you know, sort of caring about or paying attention to things that might seem at first ancillary to the problem, hearing about people's family life or their interest, it would be a normal part of civilian counseling, too. How is this story, what does this illustrate about the difference between that and military counseling?
I think the difference, Frank, was the degree of care I had to put into finding the openings. I might spend 6 weeks chatting with someone before they would say to me, you're going to be in your office later, or, you know, my wife and I aren't getting along too well since I've been back, or something like that. It could take enormous amounts of time. And I just had to be willing to let that unfold. I mean, these, like I said before, these people are schooled in being tough. And so for them to start to dismantle that and admit how much they're struggling inside is huge. And that the degree of that is, I found it to be quite different than clients in private practice.
You learned also that combat veterans were, in fact, once they started talking, were quite happy to talk, in fact, desperate to talk. I heard a lot of PTSD stories as well. And I wonder to what extent they were aware of the fact that, look, this is PTSD and here's what it is, or how much of that you had to kind of unpack and recognize as, you know, a stress disorder or something else.
Yeah, this was a few years ago when I was working on the bases, and I think that PTSD was not quite, they weren't as familiar with it. So they rarely would say to me, I think I have PTSD. What they would say is, I'm really jittery all the time, or I'm not sleeping anymore, or I can't get my head straight, or I can't follow what people are saying. So they would sort of describe one of the symptoms to me, and I would start asking them about the other things that might be happening so that I could sort of walk them into it, you know, walk them into an awareness that, you know, it wasn't just that they were jittery. There were all these other things going on that they were doing, trying to cope.
I think there's another excerpt in the book called The One Left Behind that illustrates this pretty well. Would you read that for us?
Sure. This was Sergeant Devereaux. He had been back from Iraq for 6 years, but he started joking around with me one day about hearing a car backfire, and he hit the ground when the backfire happened. And then he told me he was shaking for a long time after that. And I just looked at him and I said, what else do you do like that? And he said, what? What do you mean? And he got really nervous. And I said, just tell me the other things you do like that. And he told me a thing or two, and then pretty soon it just started spilling out. This is what he said. I look over my shoulder all the time. I mean, all the time. I never relax. I can barely stand to go into stores, and I catch myself checking the roofs of buildings for snipers. I drive close to the center of the road when I can, so I don't take a chance on something being hidden near the side. My wife says the church bells near our house are real soothing to wake up to in the middle of the night. But when I wake up, I'm panicked. It's the only way I ever wake up. So damn terrified, wondering what's wrong, like I'm locked and loaded before I'm even awake. I never leave the house except to go to work. I just can't. A buddy of mine invited me over to his house for dinner a couple of weeks ago. I told him I'd come, and I wanted to go. But when the time came to head over there, I just couldn't do it. I freaked out. I had to stay home. I didn't even call to let him know I wasn't coming. It's just too weird.
Author Elizabeth Haney, reading from her new book, The Honor Was Mine, A Look Inside the Struggles of Military Veterans. She'll be at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville tomorrow night. We have that information on her website, stateofthings.org. You've talked about being at this for about 30 years. We know about your chilly reception and the time it took you to find these inroads and ways, wedges in which you could begin the conversation. Did things get easier over time as, again, more attention in the media and other places are being drawn to this?
Things definitely got easier, and in a paradoxical way, as it got easier to connect with the veterans and as they got a little bit more savvy of what might be going on, the stories got worse because they were more willing and able to talk about it. So, you know, the stories they would tell me of what happened when they were deployed, I mean, horrible, horrible things, those started spilling out a little bit more easily. And I mean, the good news is they were more and more willing to reach out for help. And I know for myself as a therapist, I just had to build more and more tolerance for listening to things that are really, really horrific.
Horrific, but paradoxically, there's something about military service that, and I wanted to ask you this because the thought occurred to me as I was reading your book, the paradox of also the kind of adrenaline rush and the attraction to this kind of business. I mean, you describe first combat missions, which is a story you heard over and over again from veterans, in a way that's chilling but also thrilling, in a way that can be easily become addictive in the sense of the kind of rush it gives you. And it would seem to me there's a paradox in there that makes counseling even more complicated.
Yeah, there's two things, Frank, that they really, really miss when they leave the military. One is that pristine sense of purpose. When you are deployed, you're in combat, your purpose is so utterly clear. And civilian life compared to that can feel very muddy and sort of confusing and really kind of pointless. So they miss that sense of incredible purpose. The other thing they miss is the camaraderie, the brotherhood. They have never felt so bonded to another human being. You literally know the person next to you will take a bullet for you, will give their lives to save yours. And, you know, I still work with veterans now in my private practice, and every single one of them, I've said to them, do you ever wish you could go back? And before I can finish that sentence, they will say, yes, I'd go back in a heartbeat. Because they miss those two things. They miss feeling like they have that clear sense of purpose, and they miss feeling like they have that tight bond with the people around them.
And what comes with all of that is a kind of sensory experience that is nearly mystical, a sense of things slowing down, consciousness of your heartbeat, the ways in which the ground and time seem to change, which again can be kind of a, you can imagine it almost being something you absolutely want to, a narcotic. You want to go back to this. Does that complicate it? Is that a difference in treating others with trauma who have not had combat experience? They may be suffering from PTSD as well. Are there differences in the way you approach people who've had combat experience and those who haven't?
You know, I find working with combat trauma different than working with other kinds of trauma. I have worked with other kinds of trauma and other kinds of PTSD. In the work that I've seen, it's more complex because there are those layers where it was wonderful and beautiful and pristinely purposeful, and you were with a band of brothers and sisters, and it wrecked your nervous system, and you feel like you're not normal anymore. You know, you can't find your way back to feeling normal. So I find it's more complex and takes a little more sort of delicate, intricate work to help them unwind it.
You also work with families and obviously spouses of veterans. And there's one story called If a Pillar Falls about a commander's wife. Maybe you could set that up and do a short reading for us.
Sure. Deborah was a commander's wife. She had two daughters and spoke with me about her daughters and some struggles they were having. And I kept feeling like maybe she was trying to talk about herself. And sure enough, as the conversation slowed down a little bit, she shared with me that she had been to 93 memorial services because she had been to the memorial service for every soldier lost in her husband's command over several years. And here's what she said to me. I'm sitting there at the memorial services in chapel after chapel with the widows, some of them only 19 or 20. I'm hugging the parents who just lost their child. I'm sitting in pews across the aisle from soldiers whose friend isn't coming back. I felt like a nurse who couldn't stop the bleeding. Sometimes I went to two services a day. It was, and here Deborah falters, crushing. When things are so bad, it can feel like the entire outfit is sliding into chaos. I couldn't let that happen. You see, it's like having a big structure with a pillar on each corner holding up the whole place. If a pillar falls, you're in trouble. The whole thing is coming down. I just wanted to make sure they didn't see a pillar start to fall.
Elizabeth Haney is an author reading from her new book, The Honor Was Mine, A Look Inside the Struggles of Military Veterans. She'll be at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville tomorrow night at 7. The sense that you are the pillar that has to hold up when everything else is crumbling, I think is in tandem with the kind of helplessness that veterans feel, and to a certain extent you report feeling, this sense that you really can't control it all, and you must. That must be a complex bundle of emotions to try to unpack.
It's such a bundle. It caught me by surprise. You know, when I saw the level of suffering that was going on, it opened up layers of helplessness to me. You know, you want to help every single person, and I'd be on bases with literally hundreds or thousands of people that I could see needed help. And you know, you can only work with the one that's right in front of you. There's a line in the book where I said I felt like I was catching hearts falling through the air every day.
What was that like for you? Because again, you report this need to fix it, both for in the military. Look, we're going to end terrorism. That's my job. I'm going over here. I'm going to end terrorism. It becomes pretty obvious to you after a short time that you're not going to do that. And yet there's been a lot of suffering around you. And of course, you're trying to end the suffering of those in front of you. And I think there, I wonder if you've reflected on the bond you might have had between those veterans and yourself.
I did indeed. I felt like there were ways that our work was similar. We both had work we were very, very dedicated to that was costing us a lot. And I took a lot of comfort in that similarity.
And what about families as well? Are we paying enough attention to both veterans and their families in terms of the kind of counseling they need and providing the services that they deserve?
Well, listen, I'm somebody that wished that veterans and their families were getting, you know, hundreds of times more help than they're getting. You know, like I said, I still work with veterans, and I just feel like they're not getting good enough help yet.
Elizabeth Haney's new book is called The Honor Was Mine, A Look Inside the Struggles of Military Veterans. She reads at Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Also, you can look for an essay about the book in Parade Magazine, September 11th. Elizabeth, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
We have more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, humorist Dave Berry on the wonderful weirdness in his home state of Florida. Stay with us, won't you?